Hey, stick around. We got a great show for you today with Hannes Braun of the great 80s metal sounding band Kissing Dynamite. And he's going to tell us all about being a child star in Germany, signing a deal with Capitol Records, shows with Steel Panther, his thoughts on AC/DC, who's the better singer, Bon Scott or Brian Johnson. We're going to talk about his new Kissing Dynamite album and much, much more. Check it out. All right, please welcome. I want to make sure I say your name right. Hannes.
It's actually pronounced Hannes.
Hannes. Okay. Yeah, because yes. I usually do a lot of research. I try to listen to interviews. I tried to listen to some of your interviews. Most of your interviews are in German. So I was like, well, I guess we're just going to have to go in without. I mean, I got a couple that were in English and then I did some Wikipedia and all that stuff. So yeah, it's an interesting story with this band. I've never heard of you guys, but I listened to the new album and some of the old stuff, and I'm like, how have I never heard of you guys? You guys are great.
Thank you so much, Jack. It's great to hear. Yeah, well, we've been doing that for a long time now. We really started at the age of, I don't know, in school days. I was 8. My brother was 9. And we had just the first guitar lessons that our dad paid us, you know. So, and what do you learn on guitar first? It's pentatonic scales, and you can do nothing with that except blues rock. So we started with blues rock, and the first name of our first band was the Blues Kids. So that's actually the a hilarious start, how we, started in those school days. But what we wanted is being a rock band just like our idols, you know, for example, Bon Jovi, Motley Crue, AC/DC, The Scorpions, Guns N' Roses, and so on and so far. So we were constantly on the search for a singer, and we found a terrible one and a bass player. And I was pissed off every time that we stood on stage listening to this terrible singing. So I took over the mic one day, and then it was clear I was the singer from then on.
Yeah, because you're really talented. I thought it's interesting that you weren't originally the singer.
No, I didn't know that I can sing.
Oh, you didn't know? Okay, like you had never tried before?
Yeah, exactly. I think as a singer, you come to a point where you use your voice for the first time, and either you think, oh, that's good, or nah. So, and I'm not even sure if I thought that it was good, but everybody told me that I should be the new singer of the band. So I just started singing, you know, and I felt comfortable doing so. And from this point on, it took, I guess, 2 more years or so so that we received our first label contract with EMI back in the days in 2007. And we wrote our own songs back in the days already. So we had quite a bunch of songs, and we were super excited to release a real first album with our original songs. And so the debut came out in 2008, and the rest is history.
Yeah. Well, so when did you do the, weren't you on like a German Star Search or something? That was in 2004. That was 4 years before the band.
Yeah, exactly. It's funny that you mentioned, because from outside of Germany, nobody knows the show. Well, you know, it's the same problem that I guess every country has when it comes to rock. There, you just don't have any possibilities to get yourself a name. The only chance is to sing your rock songs in on a big TV show and hope for, you know, that the people will understand what you do here. And I just gave a fuck about what those TV guys told me, which songs I should sing. I said, I want to sing You Shook Me All Night Long by AC/DC. No, you should sing that song. No, I want to sing You Shook Me All Night Long by AC/DC. And so I sang You Shook Me All Night Long by AC/DC. And also Knockin' on Heaven's Door in the Gunners version.
Nice.
And so I was true to my identity, true to my musical taste, because I never, ever listened to something different than rock music, because my dad had all those CDs and vinyls at home. And we heard them passively, you could say, and we loved that. And we couldn't identify with the music our schoolmates were listening. So that was just our taste, and we wanted to do exactly that kind of music. So everything started in those school days, and the TV show, of course, was a big push in the back, because suddenly a lot of people, and it was a audience of a few millions watching those TV nights, I guess. And I couldn't walk on the streets back in the days in Germany, because I was recognized instantly and had to give autographs. And at the age of 11, that's actually a problem, because you cannot handle the stuff that's going on then. And the
just
fame,
from the German
know.
The TV show?
Yeah.
Wow. So that, how many episodes? Is it just like one episode, though, or is it like a season of?
Well, it's a season. It was five shows. I made it to the final.
Okay.
I didn't win the show, but I made it to the final. And of course, it was exciting on the one hand, because I was just a kid from a small village in the woods, you could say. And suddenly I stand in Berlin, capital of Germany, in a big TV studio, and everybody notices me around and stuff. And that changed everything, because back in those days, I almost felt like, no, I don't want to do this anymore, because I couldn't handle it, you know. But luckily, I didn't stop, because the real deal is what you do as a band, and mm-hmm. the progress that you have as a band, which is not like I'm going to play a show at TV and overnight I'm a superstar, but playing small clubs, nobody's attending, playing more small clubs, some people are attending, and so on and so forth over the years.
But isn't that more frustrating? Like, I mean, so you're saying it was more stressful to be recognized instantly for your talents. Yeah. Now it's like you actually prefer to be playing to. I think that would be, because as a podcaster, I'm like, I mean, I'm 3 years into this and I'm getting so frustrated that I'm not, you know, it's not bigger. And so, like, I think that would be more frustrating.
Well, if there would be a middle way, then it would be probably perfect. Mm. But I guess it's more natural to have a slow progress, so to speak, because maybe you know even some grown-ups don't stay on Earth when they get famous overnight and they do drugs and become alcoholics and stuff. Well, I didn't have that problems back in the days, but still, it's unnatural for your mind to have a completely changed life overnight. And I truly believe that it's better to go the slow, hard way, but that's actually also the way that is more consisting, you could say, mm-hmm. because people know me for Kissing Dynamite nowadays, not for the fact that I did a TV contribution in a casting show.
Mm-hmm. So as a kid, when you had that success, it just felt uncomfortable, and like you didn't, maybe almost like you felt like you didn't deserve it or something, or just felt like everybody wanted something from you, or what was stressful? But I would think that would be awesome to have everyone. I mean, people in America feel that way. Like, fame is it's so sought after.
Yeah. Yeah, well, but look at all those teenage superstars that also America brought up. It's mostly shattered people if you mm-hmm. look closely at them. So I guess it was not frustrating, don't get me wrong. It was exciting to go on stage and see all those people there, which you never had them before, and they were cheering at you. The thing is, you could just not process that. It's not that I thought I don't deserve it. It was more a feeling of, okay, something's not correct here. Is this real, you know? And there's a part of me was kind of afraid that all this happened, because I didn't know where this was going. And when you are so young, you're not that confident, you know, as because it's just you're just a kid, mm-hmm. basically.
Did they try to steer you into doing other sort of projects or musical things or TV appearances, and Or what happened after the show? That was it?
That's a good point because right after the show, a lot of producers approached my parents and wanted to work with me. And honestly, nobody of them is honest. They want the big success and they want it immediately and want to use the fame that you have during this period. And well, I did one attempt with some producers that felt kind of okay, but of course this was going nowhere because I couldn't stand for it. I was not the kid who was singing. I was a band member because I had my band already back in the days, and I wanted to be with my band, not standing solo on a stage on big TV stages. So I was glad that this solo thing was going nowhere, and I worked constantly on the band's career. Also, back in the days when I turned 12, I started writing the first songs, and we were going on the search for labels and stuff here in Germany, and we found EMI, which is, well, they don't exist anymore, but they were quite a big label. And that was the most exciting part of my life because for the first time I really felt, okay, this is something that's big, that has importance, because we bring out our songs to an audience. We never knew how big this audience was, and of course those first steps were slow, but they were necessary because Kissing Dynamite would not be here without those steps.
Yeah, so Kissing Dynamite, so it was named after an AC/DC song. So talk about AC/DC, because I thought I heard Jim say that for like, when he first discovered rock, he was listening to like, you know, classical music or whatever, and then somebody gave him an AC/DC tape or CD, and he listened to AC/DC only for like 2 or 3 years straight. So this was the influence that they had on your guys' band. I mean, so are you more of a Bon Scott AC/DC guy or Brian Johnson?
Well, I know this is not satisfying, but I love them both because like the early Bon Scott days in my opinion, those lyrics were greater in the Bon Scott era, and I love his voice. But also, I don't think it's fair to call Brian Johnson the new guy after 40 years. And he really had amazing vocal performances. I love, for example, Hell's Bells. It was just incredible, even for me as a kid without having the changed grown-up voice, how you could sing that high notes. And that just blew my mind. And I think, you know, it's like if you compare apples with bananas, it's two different people with two different approaches, how they sing and how they sound. So I'm just grateful that both of them shared time with AC/DC because I really love both eras.
Yeah, no, they're great. Have you tried to sing AC/DC songs? Can you sing that high? You say that he sings so high. Can you sing that high?
Well, I sang AC/DC songs because we did a lot of cover in the early days as a band, you know, back in those days when I was 12, 13, 14. And I could sing it, but I couldn't sing it that dirty like Bon Scott or Brian Johnson. I have more of a clear voice and not such a whiskey, scotchy smoker's voice, you know.
Yeah, how do they do that, like raspiness? Like, I mean, it's really unlike anyone else, but I don't know if you're familiar with comedian Jim Brewer, but he can kind of imitate that, and it's like like, how does he do that? Because I don't know anyone else that can sound like that, so it's pretty amazing that he could imitate it. And then, you know, obviously Axl Rose took over, and I'm not sure if I saw a lot of that. But that would have been, that seems like it could have fit, I guess, a little bit. Definitely, he was that was a big influence on his band as well.
Absolutely. Well, I guess that there's a physical condition that has to be there, or it's just not there. Because I watched a documentary about Steven Tyler's voice a few years ago, and they just found out that his voice is physically in a way that's not, you know, there's just a lot vibration going on around the vocal cords, and this is the rasp, actually. And either you have that or you don't have it. You cannot try to do that if that's not possible. So,
right,
or
no,
you do it, or you do it unhealthy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and some of that stuff's got to be innate. Like, it's just they're born with it, the talent and stuff, and being able to sing that high and in key, and so many other things about these guys that, you know, the move, the stage moves, and it's not just, it's so many things in the songwriting. Like you said, now you write all the songs for Kissing Dynamite.
Exactly.
Yeah, because they're so melodic. I think that's what I love about it. I mean, I think that's what I loved about that era, the 80s music, is everything was so catchy and melodic.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I grew up listening a lot to the Scorpions, which are more metal, I guess, than we are. But I loved, always I loved this big melody lines going up and down, and just this mood that they created. But at the same time, I loved the ultra catchy hooks of Bon Jovi, of Def Leppard, and all those bands. And I tried to, I sort of combined these two. I wanted to have the atmosphere, but also the catchiness. And over the years, it became our trademark that we really do songs that stick to your mind immediately. Because I think a song that you have to listen 20 times until you find something that you like about it is, well, unnecessary, you could say. For my personal taste, but it's a taste, okay, here. For different people, it might be different. But for my personal taste, if I listen to a song and I don't like it with the first play, I won't play it again. Because I don't want to listen to something that I don't like, right?
Really? But see, sometimes you hear a song on the radio and the first time you hear it, you hate it. And then later on, it grows on you.
I have my difficulties with that because either it speaks to me or it doesn't, you know, and it can be just a mood. It can be the case that I don't get the song, but I can like it anyway because something is, it does something with my body or with my brain, or, you know, or that it just sticks to my mind. And I guess talking about that, this is something nobody can deny. If you have a catchy melody in your head, either if you like it or if you don't, that's kind of a quality trademark a song has because, well, yeah.
No,
I guess that's a skill, you know?
Right. No, definitely. Because that's one thing I noticed with your songs. They're like I said, they're really catchy. And that's what I like. But some people, it's weird because some people don't, they like a different part of the sound. Maybe it's like they're listening to the drum beat or something, and so I guess everybody's different. I hear what you're saying though, like usually the first time you hear it, it definitely makes a difference. I guess there's some songs where you could hear it later and it can grow on you, but usually it's the first time you hear it, it's a make or break. So with your band, you said EMI, is that the same as Capitol? Or tell me about how you guys got this deal, because this was 2007. And even back then, I think that was a little bit of a bigger deal to be on a major label. How did you get that deal with Capitol?
Yeah, it was EMI Capitol. You know, we found a producer team. Back in the days, I didn't produce the records. Now I do. I mean, I couldn't produce when I was 15, when we had the record label, when we found the record label. Just as I said, we found a producer team that we felt comfortable with. Also as a band, not just me. And they had, of course, a bigger network than we had back in the days because they were professional in the scene. And so we recorded the first demos with them, and they would send it to all those record labels that were around and actually interesting. And so EMI was, all of a sudden, they were hooked by the band, by our songs, and we came to the company's place to play like a showcase, you know. And again, they were blown away. And the next day, the A&R was at our hotel room, telling us that they want to sign a contract with us. So this was how the story goes.
So then, but did you only do one album on Capitol?
No, it was two.
Two? Okay.
It was two, and the first one was not successful at all, or like, you could say so, because we didn't went into the charts, in the German charts, and of course that was the important thing for the label. But they had the strong belief that that we have the, you know, the concept and the option to grow on the market. And so they wanted to do a second album with us. Yeah. But the thing was, the team and everything changed within this time. So
that's typical.
And the new team didn't have a clue what to do with us. For them, we were just like aliens, you know?
Okay.
They were the pop and hip hop guys, and they had to work with a rock band like us. It doesn't work. So this second label was going into the charts, but not on a high reach, so to speak. And so we changed labels after that second record, and we did three albums then with AFM Records, a smaller label, which is dedicated to rock and metal.
Mm.
And after that, we were going back to the major business, and we went with Sony, and now with Napalm.
Oh, okay, with Napalm, yeah. So in 2012, though, you guys, off that Money, Sex, and Power album, you did a tour with Steel Panther?
Well, it was not a real tour. It was a few shows, but yeah, we did so, and that was also a real funny thing to do. So because we actually were quite fans of Steel Panther, or at least of the songs that they wrote. And the thing is, we actually had tickets for a show that they did in Germany, and it came all of a sudden, the offer that we could open up for Steel Panther. And so we sold our tickets in front of the venue in order to play there. And that
funny.
Was really insane. Yeah.
So what would do you get to go backstage or anything? Or like, I'm just so curious of that show, like how they put it together, because every time I've seen them, like, I don't even know, like 30 times or something. Every time I see them, it's different. They never, it's like, they must not have a script. Do they just make that stuff up as they go? Because it's always different. It's amazing how they can always come up with new material, and it's always hilarious.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's more or less like a comedian show. You know, they have their, you could say, milestones in their program, and they sort of dancing around them. You know, I guess it's a lot of stand-up comedy, of course, but with a sort of a structure behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, what was interesting to us, we saw them without their wigs and stuff, and they're really looking good without them wigs also, like Hollywood movie stars, you know?
Huh.
And, yeah, well, that was interesting.
That's funny. So then, yeah, and then besides touring with Steel Panther, you played all these festivals. Like the Alcatraz and the Bang Your Head. That was the one I was really, is that true? You did a Bang Your Head festival with, Queensryche, Great White, White Lion, Judas Priest. Exactly. Was that like one of the biggest shows you've ever done? That sounds amazing.
Well, the biggest show that we have done so far is, Wacken. Because Bang Your Head is not that big as it was 15 years ago.
Mm.
But anyhow, it was a great experience to play with those bands that you mentioned, because all of them are favorites of ours as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always a big pleasure if we play a show with bands that we like and share the stage with them. I remember Hellfest in France. That's a real big one also. We shared the stage on this day with Whitesnake, Europe, Def Leppard, and Twisted Sister, and that was it.
Wow! And then you get to
stage and us guys. Yeah.
Yeah. So then you get to mingle with the bands at all afterwards, or
partly. I mean, some of those bands, and I don't blame them for this fact. Some of those bands appear all of a sudden on stage, and then you don't see them anymore.
Yeah.
But some of those guys are really into chatting and having a drink together. And so it depends, I guess, also on the mood, what those guys feel.
That's super cool. Well, so yeah, let's talk about the new album. So you produced, recorded, and mixed all this stuff, or you had a little help with the mixing, right? By this Jacob Hansen guy.
Well, Jacob Hansen did the mastering. Mastering is something mastering, different okay. than mixing. So right. I produced, recorded, and mixed it. And mastering is like more of an engineer thing.
Okay.
They, you know, adapt the loudness and stuff.
Okay.
And, give it the last gold dust, you could say. But yeah, I did all the hard work on on the record. And no, I don't want to say that mastering is not hard work, but yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, a majority of the, because those are, it's a lot of things to write, and obviously you're singing and then you're producing it and all that stuff. Do you write all the songs by yourself, or do you have any help from the rest of the band on some of the songwriting?
No, not of the band. I am the main songwriter. And for lyrics, I partly work with different people because I can write lyrics, and I do also write a lot of lyrics, but I'm more of the composition guy. You know, I write the songs with blah, blah English at first because that feels easier for me to have a cool verse, a cool chorus where I don't think so much about the sense, but like a metric shape to the song and stuff. And my experience is that I can write more catchy songs with this method.
Hmm. Yeah, because you don't. You know, none of your songs are in German.
No. We always loved this internationality of the bands that I mentioned.
Uh-huh.
So for us, it was clear to do English songs. I can write English lyrics. That's not the problem. I do that also, but it's just a more comfortable way to start songwriting when I don't focus too much on a sincere line, and it slaves me to do the melody, the line ones, you know. I want to start with the melody and the atmosphere first and then care about the lyrics.
Does that hurt you though with your home country? Like do most German people speak English, or do they just, they don't, sometimes they don't speak it, but they sing along anyways?
They miss a lot of the sense of the songs, but my experience is, for example, Not the End of the Road, the title track.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, also the whole idea and the lyric line, the line, you know, for the hook came from me. And I played on my rooftop, I played it to friends of ours, and there was only this line, "This is not the end of the road." Only this line was part of the song yet at this point when I played it to the friends. And all the rest of the singing was blah, blah, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't get it. Some of them started crying when the chorus striked in, because
wow,
just the line was so emotional to them, because they were going through a difficult time. And that opened my eyes on the topic also one more time, that in Germany, it's most of the people, they stick to the chorus. Either the chorus speaks to them,
mm-hmm,
or it doesn't. Hey, Chuck, I know I was late, and I would answer one more question, but
okay,
actually, since 2 minutes, I have to do a different interview.
Oh, sure. I'm sorry. Yeah. Yeah. So just the last thing is, I always end with a charity now. And I think the song, which is really cool, because they said that the Good Life, is that the one that's about childhood cancer?
Exactly. We as a band always supported the fight against cancer, because there was a boy years ago living close to our village that we come from, and he is the same age, and he found out that he suffers leukemia back then,
mm-hmm,
which was quite shocking for us because of the you know, living almost at the same place, having the same age. And so we put on a show to raise some money to donate it to him and his family in order to pay his therapy and stuff. And long story short, that was a tricky thing, because you have to find a transplantant, cell transplantant, when you suffer leukemia. But he really found someone, and he's healthy nowadays. So we started to think, well, it was not much that we could do, but we could do something, and we could help, you know. So we never lost that on the way, and we always were supporting all the fight against cancer, especially when it's about children. And there's an association near where we live here, and they specialize themselves in the fight against cancer when it's about children. So we did quite a lot of work with them to raise some money, because that's it. That's what it's about, to make these children's lives better,
or okay,
to heal them, of course.
So where can people donate now? I mean, if they have a few extra bucks after they buy your new album, of course.
They can find about the association on our website. And if the most simple way is stream and buy the song Good Life, because the proceeds are going to the association.
Okay, I'll put the link in the show notes along with your website so people can check out the new music. It's fabulous. I love it. It's great stuff.
Thank you so much for doing this.
I'll let you get to your next interview.
Thank you. All right. And sorry for being late.
Oh, no problem. No problem. See you later.
Have fun.
All right. Bye-bye. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please check out some of my other episodes and make sure to subscribe to the show wherever you watch or listen. I'm really trying to build up that 1,000 subscribers on YouTube, and I'm going to be posting more and more short clips on social media so you can get a preview of the episode. I know some people really like that, and I've started a new Instagram account that's going to be solely for that purpose. Also, I'm going to try TikTok. So if you just like the short clips, you want to get a preview of the episodes, you can check those out. And I'm going to make some other changes to the show as well. Obviously, you're noticing the production is different. I've got lighting and a different camera. And I'm possibly going to be changing the intro and outro and maybe even the theme music. So I'm just going to continue to strive to make a great show for you. But let me know what your thoughts are on everything, what you like, what you don't like, guests you want to see. Or any feedback. I love hearing from you guys. You can respond in the comments on YouTube or on social media, or you can private message me on social media or email. Thank you again for your support. Have a great rest of your day, and remember to shoot for the moon.